The war on drugs, what it does is eliminate excess and then address the deficit by targeting on territories. One could ask the question, and Guillaume is here and would know better than me, why is the Noboa family and Noboa president and the banana plantations that he mentioned and we all know have been involved in drug trafficking or should at least be investigated seriously, not touched? And yet the target is President Petro, who one can say anything good or bad about his policies, but he is not a drug trafficker, and his approach to the whole drug issue is the exchange of the drug production for good conditions and living conditions for people. So when you put tariffs on these legal products, then you're forcing people into the drug trade and then you kill them.
We have to leave it there, but we're going to do an interview in Spanish with all three of our guests. Dr. Manuel Rosenthal, thank you for joining us from Cauca, Colombia. Former Foreign Minister Guillaume Long, thank you for joining us from New Delhi, India. Former Foreign Minister from Ecuador. And we want to thank the ambassador as well, Daniel Garcia Pena. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Locus Focus, a weekly conversation about our place on the planet, every Monday morning at 10 on KBOO Community Radio. Each week, host Barbara Bernstein talks with local, regional, and national experts, activists, and policymakers about climate change, river protection, the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy, salmon restoration, forest management, and all the other things that are critical to protect our planet. That's every Monday at 10 a.m. on your community radio station, KBOO.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and from Huertos PDX, presenting the Día de los Muertos celebration from Saturday, November 1st through Sunday, November 2nd, starting at noon. The event features live music, vendors, children's sugar school decorating, and traditional dance performances. More information can be found on Facebook at Muertos PDX.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:02 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Jacqueline Keeler.
You're in need of a gig that'll help you feel big. Come with me and put some folks in detention. Just last week was kind of rough. I put a kid in cuffs. I zip-tied a woman to a van. We can sneak around town hunting working folks down. I hear they got a great benefit plan. Join ICE, boy, ain't it nice. Join ICE, take my advice. If you're lacking control and authority, come with me and hunt down minorities. Join ICE. See, I failed the academy, the cops weren't having me, the army didn't sound that fun. So I found me a paramilitary operation that was keen to hand me a gun. I got picked on at school, I never felt that cool, there's a hole in my soul that just erased. Well, if you're looking for purpose in the current circus, if you're seeking respect and attention, if you're in need of a gig that'll help you feel big, come with me and put some folks in detention. Just last week was kind of rough. I put a kid in cuffs. I zip-tied a woman to a van. We can sneak around town hunting working folks down. I hear they got a great benefit plan. Join ICE, boy, ain't it nice. Join ICE, take my advice. If you're lacking control and authority, come with me and hunt down minorities. Join ICE.
See, I failed the academy, the cops weren't having me, the army didn't sound that fun. So I found me a paramilitary operation that was keen to hand me a gun. I got picked on at school, I never felt that cool. There's a hole in my soul that just erased. Well, if you're looking for purpose in the current circus, if you're seeking respect and attention.
Good morning. This is Jacqueline Keeler, and this is Wednesday Talk Radio. And this morning we're discussing, will Trump send troops to Portland? As many of you know, on earlier this week, on Monday, Trump had a big win. The Ninth Circuit and Appeals Court ruled 2-1 that he can send troops to the Rose City. So I guess today we're going to discuss what happens next. What do you think of this ruling? How do you feel? You can call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. We're obviously coming off an amazing Saturday No Kings protest, over which I think the Oregonian was reporting 40,000 people were marching. Some of the counts on the ground were much higher than that. And you know, what does this all mean? How are we going to proceed forward? What comes next? As some of you may know, Senator Merkley has been talking on the floor of the talking about Trump's grave threats in a marathon overnight on the Senate floor, discussing what might happen next. So please do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. And I should note the two judges who voted for this were appointed by President Trump, and they voted to allow him to deploy the National Guard into Portland. And this decision was made on Monday. And this grants the White House sweeping authority to suppress peaceful protests based on false claims of widespread violence. As you all know, they are even recently Trump has described Trump has described Portland in terms that, you know, that it's a complete war zone here. And and this 2-1 decision from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals rests on a completely a credulous reading of the record. The majority largely accepted Trump's portrayal of Portland as a war zone, dismissing the district court's extensive findings to the contrary. So and as dissenting judge Susan Graber pointed out, Trump's illegal deployment of troops rests on false pretenses, fabrication, and propaganda, all political theater that no court should dignify. And yet here this court did. So how do you feel about this? Do you feel safe, or what is your opinion of what is going on? The number here is 503-231-8187. And yeah, just let me know what you think. I'm reading here Reuters reported on this yesterday, and they noted that a divided U.S. appeals court ruled on Monday that Donald Trump can send National Guard troops into Portland, Oregon, despite objections by the leaders of the city and state, giving the Republican president an important legal victory as he dispatches military forces to a growing number of Democratic-led locales. A three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit, of the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, granted the Justice Department's request to put on hold a judge's order that had blocked the deployment while a legal challenge to Trump's actions play out. And so the court said that sending in the National Guard was an appropriate response to protesters. All you Portland protesters, please let us know how you feel about this description by the Ninth Circuit. Circuit Judges Bridget Bade and Circuit Judge Ryan Nelson, who were both appointed by Trump in his first term. Nelson also wrote a concurring opinion saying courts have no ability to even review the president's decision to send troops. So, yeah. So basically saying that only the president, in this case Trump, has the right to decide whether, you know, troops should be sent to American cities and basically have the ability to fire on U.S. citizens exercising their First Amendment. Hi, we have a caller. Hi, Molly. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate what you're doing in this segment.
Thank you for calling in.
I just was calling because I wanted to offer a point of clarification that I thought would kind of enrich our unpacking of this situation.
Sure, of course.
So I know that the original decision was made by a judge in Portland, and that was by a judge who lives in this city and just has like a large stake in this matter. But the appeals court was actually in like rural Washington that just ruled in favor of allowing the troops in. And I just think that that is like a pretty significant point of difference between the two courts, and just raises some questions about state sovereignty and self-determination and autonomy that I think would be really valuable to address.
Yes, that's a great point. Yeah, and this was not the full Ninth Circuit. This was just three members. Certainly, I think that our elected officials can request that they sit en banc, which would be all of them or most of them, and see what kind of ruling we get then. The Ninth Circuit used to be quite progressive. I think it's changed quite a bit with recent appointments. So, that's a very good point. This is a direct attack on the rule of law and also the states' rights. Certainly, I mean, the Republicans are always going on about states' rights when it involves certain states' rights to violate the rights of people of color. Now they are saying that because Oregon and other states, and of course they're attacking Oregon because of sanctuary laws and Portland and many other cities and states in the country. And they are trying to basically create a more free and fair country. That seems to be what has led to Portland being targeted. And
And it's not over yet. The fight is still going in the court system. I think that there is a response that's being curated by judges currently to try to address that appeals court decision. So I just wanted to call in and say it's not over, and the folks in the Ninth District are absolutely continuing to fight for our autonomy and our self-determination and our sovereignty.
I had a question. What could you describe a bit more what you view as sort of the state, the sovereignty of the state versus that of these courts in the Bay Area? Could you give that a little more detail?
Yeah, absolutely. And just as a regular person, our sovereignty to me is essentially being able to decide what kind of proportional response we want to have as a state to challenges that our law enforcement institutions face with various protest responses. And I maybe not be the best person to speak to this because I don't think that the National Guard should ever be dispersed to address citizens or anything domestic whatsoever, but ultimately that should be the disbursement of any kind of enforcement in my opinion in this state should be from the lawmakers in this state that we've elected, that we back to some extent.
Thank you so much, Molly. Once again, if you want to call in, the number here is 503-231-8187. And we are discussing the recent appeals court ruling that said that Trump can deploy troops here in Portland. Hi, we have another caller. Hi, Santiago. Good morning.
Good morning. I think the problem with, it's not surprising that Trump wants to deploy the National Guard. But I think really what it comes down to is the reason why the protests really haven't been as violent as we've seen is because it's majority white people out right now doing the protesting. And that has a lot to do with it because their humanity is much more respected than those of black and brown folks. But I also think it's that we don't have a fundamental understanding of how the state views violence or what requires a violent intervention. And I think, and I really believe it's because, like, white people in general have not experienced the violence of the state for, like, benign reasons. I like to point people at to the MOVE bombing in Philadelphia in the 1980s, mm-hmm. when they had a building run by the Africa family with the MOVE movement.
Yes.
And they were promoting having black folks sticking together and building community, but it was in a way that was threatening to the power structure. And when the Africa family refused to budge on what they felt was right, the police just came in and hit them with a brick of C4. And I just don't think people understand, especially, and I'm going to say it again, especially white people don't understand how the violence of their own state works. Hmm. And I just, it's they will crack your skull if they want to.
Yeah.
They don't care that you're quote unquote peaceful. What they care about is, like, what is fundamentally affecting the ability for capital to move and for things to function. And I think it's also important to remember that while Jeff Merkley is out there, you know, ostensibly doing something, speaking up, like, most Democrats are complicit with this. Hmm. And so we have to be seeking power outside of the parameters of the two-party system. You know, we need to be working on building dual power right now. We need to be working on a worker-led movement. You know, like I'm working with some folks to get the Revolutionary Workers Party out here, as well as Workers Strike Back, because that's another thing we don't understand. A lot of people, it's like we're placing our hope in people who have fundamentally failed us. You know, the second disappointment is Republicans, because we can already see what's coming. But the first disappointment is always Democrats, because they're supposed to be on our side and they keep saying that they're on our side, but they keep letting us down when the chips are there, and they have no backbone. Mm-hmm. And if we had a workers movement like we did in the 30s, you know, or even during the civil rights era, there would be power enough to put pressure, but we don't have it. And we don't have it because both parties have fundamentally destroyed people powered movements in order to save capitalism. So we're almost building from negative, if not from negative. So we have to choose another direction of political consciousness if we're really going to be serious about saving what's out here. I truly believe that the people who are protesting at these No Kings in 5051 have their heart in the right place, mm-hmm. but ultimately they're being led by groups of people who have the most to lose. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have white people leading movements where there's a lot of white leadership, ultimately this system benefits them, and a lot of them don't see it. Mm-hmm. You know, even when it's at its most brutal, they don't understand fundamentally how it works. Or if they do, the alternative to not having a system that benefits them, even if marginally, is so scary that, you know, the idea of changing it freaks them out, you know? Whereas, like, when we've had movements that were led by black folks, by indigenous folks, you know, they speak to the truth of what we're living in, even in the best of times. I think that fundamentally breaks through the mythology of what people believe America is. It's like people were out there holding signs that said the founding fathers weren't fascists. I'm like, fascist to who? You know what I mean? Like, the American mythology is so thick that, like, people think that, you know, they don't understand that even the founding of this country is just fundamentally destructive and fundamentally anti-human. But we've been given so much propaganda that allows us to believe that there's something within it that will allow it to save it, when the only democracy we've had has come from outside of the confines. So, you know, if we're really going to be serious about wanting to save this shit, you know, we got to be able to reach back into, you know, the way our elders did it in the 60s and 70s, the way the workers' movements did it in the 30s. You know, mm-hmm. they had a threat. You know, they threatened power. They literally, you know, they were doing it on the heels of the Russian Revolution, said, look, if you don't give us something, what they did in Russia, you know, to the Tsars, we're going to do it to you. and they have the people power to back it up. And, you know, that's another thing, once again, coming back to it, liberals don't understand violence, the oppressor generally sets the heat of the resistance. And often that eventually leads to violent resistance because the state only speaks one language. And that's why they're trying to get people to fight. So if they can't do it by playing fair, they're going to do it by playing dirty. And yeah. we can't be surprised when they resort to tactics that make no sense because if we know history, we know that that's how it happens.
Thank you. Yeah, I totally agree. I think I'm very aware that the violence being shown here is something that it is happening to protesters here in Portland. I mean, just yesterday, a blind protester was dragged and detained by the feds. I'm reading a headline here from the Oregonian, and they're saying that folks reported that agents picked the weakest person they could find. He's Quinn Haberle yep. believes his disability and diminutive stature are precisely why six federal agents descended upon him during a protest outside the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Facility in South Portland last weekend and dragged him into the building. He says, I think mm-hmm. they wanted to make Absolutely. A point, said Haberle, who was mm-hmm. 4'6" and legally blind. So they picked the weakest person they could find and made a big show out of it. And so,
And that's the fundamental misunderstanding of violence on the part of liberals. Like they want it. They don't care if you're nice. They will crack your skulls. And they're a bunch of cowards at the end of the day. But we have to understand that that's the language they're going to speak, even if we're not speaking it. And that, even if we don't want violence to be here, it's already here. It's been here for hundreds of years, mm-hmm. even if you haven't seen it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's layers of illusion that people are living in.
Of domestic terrorism done against particularly people of color, And, yep. mm-hmm. I mean,
100%.
The whole institution of slavery is terrorism. And yeah.
The whole institution of Indian removal.
Yes, yes.
Is terrorism.
I know. My ancestors were, held at in basically concentration camps in New Mexico. My Navajo ancestors and my Dakota ancestors and Lakota ancestors mm-hmm. were faced.
Yeah, that's why the res exists. That's why the ghetto exists. That's why the barrio exists. It's warehousing of
the Navajo Nation. The Navajo Nation is our sacred land. It's between the four sacred rivers and the four sacred mountains. Yeah. So, but it's not just a prison. It's our homeland. But yeah, that's it.
But that's what I mean. It's like even your homeland is a prison. Even if it is your homeland, because
we can't develop the land. They won't give us title. The U.S. keeps title to itself. So people can't borrow money to start a business or buy a house or anything. So it leaves it quite, without a lot of development, and a lot of people have to leave, and stuff. So, yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Santiago. And mm-hmm. I'd like for other folks to call in too. The number here is 503-231-8187. And we are talking about Trump's recent win. The U.S. Court of Appeals, the Ninth Circuit, has in a 2-1 vote, they decided that Trump can send military to Portland. Have a militarized response to Portland's protests, and there has been a response from our own state officials. Lawyers for the state on Tuesday, that's yesterday, urged U.S. District Judge Karen J. Immergut, she's the one that has issued the temporary orders barring federal deployment of National Guard troops. They've asked her to not lift that order and to protect Portland's U.S. The deployment is to protect the ICE facility here in Portland. They filed the request after a divided three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals on Monday placed a hold on Immergut's narrow order that barred federal deployment and of only Oregon National Guard troops. The appellate majority, so the first order that she did barred deployment of the of Oregon National Guard troops in the second order, I think, barred from anywhere else. So the I'll go over that in more detail in a bit. The appellate court, and so the present order, the present finding by the Ninth Circuit does only applies to her first order, not her second order. Although the two judges that were voted, basically sided with Trump, have said that she should lift the second order since it's based on the same legal reasoning. The appellate panel's majority said their finding also should apply to, I'm reading again for the Oregonian, sorry. The appellate panel's majority said their finding also should apply to Immergut's second broader order. The state lawyer said Immergut should keep the second order in place until the Ninth Circuit decides if a larger panel of 11 judges should rehear the matter. So that would be it, the Ninth Circuit sitting en banc, which I mentioned earlier. And I think 8 of the judges have to vote in Oregon's favor to keep the ban. The Trump administration lawyers have asked Immergut to set aside or put a hold on both of her orders, arguing that she granted the second broader one based on the same legal reasoning that she used to justify her first order. But Brian Marshall, a senior Oregon assistant attorney general, said in a new brief that the federal lawyers misconstrue the Ninth Circuit's 2-1 ruling as binding circuit precedent. He argued that it's not final and it doesn't represent a significant change in the law. On Tuesday night, Immergut ordered the federal government to file a reply to the issues the state, this is just last night, to file a reply to the issues the state raised in its response brief and to file it with the court by noon on Thursday. So there may be no movement on this today, especially if they're waiting for the feds to respond by Thursday at noon, tomorrow at noon. The state lawyers argue that if Immergut is inclined to consider the Ninth Circuit ruling as binding, she should at most maintain the order barring deployment of troops from out of state and allow only what the Ninth Circuit's decision permitted, federal deployment of Oregon National Guard troops. So yeah, so the Ninth Circuit's decision on Monday only applies to the Oregon National Guard. And so members of the Oregon and California National Guards are said to be waiting at one or two Oregon military training centers to go to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement building, to the ICE building in Portland, to protect the property and officers from protests. I should note, I know that the National Guard General for Oregon had written a note saying that they were going to protect the citizens of Oregon. So we'll see how that plays out. And I believe they're located in Happy Valley, Immergut's second order issued on October 5th, and a day after her initial order, came after Trump called up hundreds of California National Guard and Texas National Guard members to deploy to Portland. So the mobilization of troops from out of state raises difficult questions of federalism that the Ninth Circuit panel did not address, as the federal government never challenged Immergut's second order to the appeals court, Marshall wrote. So, So they have not actually this finding by the Ninth Circuit three judge panel does not actually address the issue of bringing in troops from out of state, like California, which of course Governor Newsom opposes, and from Texas, which of course the governor there is fully supportive of, and those troops in those states have already, well, the state. In California, the troops have already been federalized, I believe. And so that's how Trump is believes he can deploy them here. The Trump administration sought to circumvent Immergut's initial order by calling in hundreds of additional out-of-state troops, he argued. The Trump administration, the uncertain legal landscape is a quagmire of defendants' own making, Marshall wrote. Since the federal government failed to challenge Immergut's second order, this court should not reward that gamesmanship by granting defendants' motion. The Ninth Circuit, so there are two orders that Judge Immergut issued to stop the deployment of National Guard units here in Portland. And the first one is the one that the Ninth Circuit panel addressed and sided with Trump but the second one, which also I think is joined by was also a suit joined by the by California. That has not been addressed. They simply want her to dismiss it as well, just based on the idea that it has the same legal basis. So the Ninth Circuit panel's majority ruled that the president is due significant deference and that his decision to mobilize only 200 Oregon National Guard members for 60 days to Portland was a, quote, measured response. Yeah. I guess we're just stuff. This is a war zone, right? Portland, that's what Trump is saying. So only 200 Oregon National Guard members here is a measured response. Marshall also submitted an October 16th memo from the Executive Secretary of the U.S. Department of Defense, which disclosed that Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth extended the federal deployment to Oregon of 200 California National Guard troops and 200 Texas National Guard troops beyond November and some through early next year. At Trump's direction, Hegseth directed the 200 California National Guard members' deployment to Oregon be extended from November 4th to February 2nd. So the Trump administration wants these National Guard, out-of-state National Guard members to stay until February of next year, and that 200 Texas National Guard members' deployment to be extended through December 4th. So Colonel Anthony S. Fuscalero, Executive Secretary of the U.S. Department of Defense, wrote in the memo they would be deployed with additional headquarters and support staff. So the footprint 400 personnel is the minimum required to protect federal functions, personnel, and property in Oregon under current circumstances. So, So this memo was stamped a day after Immergut had extended both her temporary restraining orders to November 1st for the one barring federal deployment of Oregon National Guard members and to November 2nd for the second broader one barring any federal deployment of any National Guard in Oregon. So Immergut's restraining orders will only apply to basically the end of this month. So we don't know what will happen after her orders expire, particularly the second one, which was not directly addressed by this Ninth Circuit finding. So, once again, let me know what you guys think of all this. The number here is 503-231-8187. And what do you think is going to happen next with Trump believing now that he has the right to deploy troops here in Portland, and what happens next? So please let me know. So what would troops do in Portland if they do end up coming here? And there was a recent article in the Oregonian, actually today. Would they have guns? This is what they're asking. Accompany ICE agents on raids. So after this appeals court removed a roadblock to troops arriving in Portland, many residents are anxious about what troops would do once here. So what is going to happen there? That's the question we have right now. Go ahead and call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. And tell me what you think is going to happen next. As some of you may know, Jeff Merkley is filibustering in the Senate. And he has, I think Newsweek is reporting on it live. And I guess as of, he's definitely passed, I think this was at 6 a.m., but he's passed the 16-hour mark in his filibuster speech on the Senate floor. This is from Newsweek, opposing President Donald Trump and what the Oregon Democrat describes as a shift towards authoritarianism in the U.S. under the Republican administration. And that this is an incredible threat to our nation, Merkley, a progressive, said in his marathon speech, to the entire vision of our Constitution, to the entire platform on which our freedom exists. This is a speech. The speech is a protest against what Merkley, our senator, says is a threat to democracy posed by Trump. And he's speaking before a sign that ring the alarm bells, authoritarianism is here now. And do you agree with Senator Merkley that authoritarianism is here now? And what do you think, what do you want our elected leaders to do about this? And what do you think we can do about this? And what do you expect to happen next? Once again, the number here is 503-231-8187. And so this is an extraordinary moment, I think, in U.S. history. I don't think there's, I mean, there have been instances in the past. Certainly, we have a caller. Hi, Tangent. Hi, good morning. This is Jackie.
Yeah, hi, Tangent here. Uh-huh. Yeah, I wanted to run over some phrases that are being used. One is that it's Gamey Goodman, and many people say this, Trump said on Truth Social today, da-da-da-da. Okay, I would say on his platform, okay, on his bought and paid for platform said, he named it that just so every time he says something, the word truth is in the sentence. You get it?
Yep, I do.
All right, so that's one idea. The other is, so then another misnomer or misphrase or is like, they keep talking about how these Venezuelan boats were bombed without proof or evidence.
Yes.
Well, even if they had proof or evidence, they would, like, arrest them. As the ambassador mentioned, like, that you want to question these people, okay, and see where they came from, who's paying them, tra-la-la-la. There we are. Troops in Portland, I don't know. You know, it's they're going to do what they want to do. You know, when I was listening to you, and I don't want to make it, this is not a criticism of you, but you're reading reports and things and about how this court said that, and then this court does this, and then maybe another court. It just all sounds like, you know, gobbledygook in a way. The words sound, you know, really interesting and kind of important, but it's just like this. Well, first of all, look, it'll say this judge ruled, and then a week later, some other judge overruled. So, like, who really has any rule here?
Yeah, it's definitely
a... If he ruled, then that would be it, right? But that, or he, or whoever it was, but it didn't really have much force. If you can just simply hire, you know, or, well, he already had, you know, so again, so like...
Well, Trump has had a big impact on the justice system.
Trump lost, but he already had this ploy in place, you know, with his judges. Like, he knew about this a year or two early, I don't know, but...
Yeah, I think that's one of the big issues in the defense of our democracy is the sort of takeover of the judicial branch, and of the suspension of the rule of law, which now caters to one man's impulses, right? And so you have the two judges. So all three judges, what we're discussing here, the judge here, Judge Immergut. She was appointed by Trump, but she is actually choosing to follow the law. And as the previous caller mentioned, she does live here. And then the other two judges, the Ninth Circuit is based in San Francisco, but the other two judges were who voted to give Trump the power to deploy the Oregon National Guard here. They are also Trump appointees. Trump was able to
decide. I didn't like that judge's ruling. I just would go choose another court.
That's what definitely happens. You know, court shopping happens, and you know, it's why Trump has been sending, you know, a lot, basically smuggling or kidnapping people and sending them to states where he feels the courts would be more in his favor, like kidnapping people from New York State and taking them to Texas
Louisiana,
or Florida.
Yeah, and leaving Louisiana in the broad daylight.
Yes. So he's been doing that and playing those games, and so it's definitely, and of course, you see the Supreme Court. You know, now we know anything that goes to the Supreme Court will probably go in Trump's way, and so this is another way in which democracy, the democratic rule, and the rule of law is being degraded by the force of this person's ego, right?
And if he says democracy one more time, and he probably will. You should. My wife happens to listen to a right-wing program, and not because she likes Trump, she hates him, but she used to listen for like 10 years, okay? So, but anyway, they're acting like the Democrats, and he's speaking this stuff, but they're broadcasting. The Democrats are the enemy.
Yep, yep.
The actual, like, they're like almost like the insurrectionists. They're an enemy. You get it? It's like, no, that's not, even if you don't like the guy, they used to have respect for each other, even if it was phony decorum, you know? And now it's just like school, you know, middle school, you know, blather coming out of these kids, you know. A New Yorker, but what am I? Not exactly, but different variations on such, okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, Trump's approval rating has been going down, and even amongst, you know, it's yeah. And
no, and I've talked to people that, my son works for someone, and he knows people that were, he voted, I think, for Trump, and they're all, a lot, these guys have the brains, and they've already seen that they made a huge mistake, but I don't know how much of that is out there, but I do have proof that there is at least two in here in Oregon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, but it's definitely, I think people,
must be more.
I mean, he's underwater now, but there's still a strong core support for him. And that sort of speaks to what, you know, how he appeals to his base and to to a certain group of Americans who I have to say are largely white Americans, you know? And so I think,
let's say misinformed. Okay, somebody might look at me and use that term. I don't like that term. That's why I go by tangent. But
well, I think I think that whiteness is definitely something that my book Standoff. I go into a lot of examination of the origins of that term historically, okay. And also sort of because what I do is I compare the origin stories of white Americans to that of my dad's people, the Lakota people, and because I was looking at Standing Rock in particular, and but they the origin stories I've mentioned this before on the show, but I view them as algorithms because they basically begin to sort of define your reality and also what you view the world to be like and your options, right? So it's almost like putting a mouse in, like a laboratory mouse in a maze, right? These algorithms create the maze. And so how do you get out of it? You basically are led. And so this is why I think the concept of whiteness and the, you know, the different institutions that support it in this country, whether you're talking about, you know, the government, the media, the laws, the way the laws are enforced, the use of violence selectively against people of color and against folks who stand up for them, regardless of their status, is a big part of that. And so that's what we're seeing.
I appreciate that. But so when you just use the term people of color, but what do you think about people being branded as red or yellow? You see what I'm saying?
That is happening now. The whole.
Well, I mean, it's been happening.
Yeah. No, the well, I think they're calling it also, you know, the red scare from, you know, the earlier days.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
And then the blue scare.
But they also call them pinko lefties or whatever, commies or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that, when you're talking about being a person of color in this country, you are talking about decisions that are made about you before people know anything about you, you know, whether they know your political, you know, status or whatever. There is that sort of privilege with whiteness where people, you're given a moment of grace where people are willing to look at you as an individual. With people of color, that's just not the case.
Okay.
But I'm not talking about individual basis. I'm talking about on a societal basis,
okay.
You know? So yeah, that's where it becomes more damaging and harder.
I face plenty of prejudice also, but I don't want to compare my plight or, you know, to anybody else's.
Well, we're talking about you know, the U.S. government is definitely, I think that, and certainly Republicans, right-wing Republicans are making this very clear. I mean, there was a recent scandal with those young Republicans, quote unquote, I think some of them were as old as 40, but basically saying, you know, like kind of talking about, well, the one recent nominee from Trump, he basically said he liked being a little, you know, Nazi. Jimmy.
Had a little Nazi streak.
Yes. So, and
they're yellow streak up your back or what?
Yeah, okay. They're blatantly, you know, describing in these leaked text messages and I guess chats that they are racist, Jimmy.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the basis of what they're doing. You know, I mean, why is it that people are being now they're saying that that they can actually grab ICE can grab people based on racial profiling, right?
Well, they have been.
Yeah.
And this is one more. I guess I'll let you go because you're, you know, having fun. But that Trump said that he was authorizing the CIA to work inside of Venezuela. Bull! They have been.
Yeah, I think.
They're part of it. Okay, that's part of that myth. We can just, you know, that's what I want people to see. Don't get shocked by these things, he says. Look beyond, deeper. I don't know if you caught that, where the ambassador was mentioning much of the cocaine is coming on the Pacific on banana boats. Okay.
Yeah, not via the Atlantic. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks
for
calling in.
Peace to everyone.
Thank you.
Talk to you again.
Yeah. And so, once again, we are discussing the recent Ninth Circuit ruling. We have another caller. Hi, John. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Oh, hi. You were asking about what's coming,
yes.
What's next with all this. Well, and John Trudell, they're mining our minds all the time.
Yeah.
Got to watch the conduct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the rhetoric is one thing. The conduct is something else. But the conduct totally supporting Trump's rhetoric when he says he wants to be president forever.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I mean
that's what's next.
Mm.
You know, the hijacking, like, you know, I mean, people have been talking about how, you know, they may be planning to just take all the voting machines.
Yeah.
You know, once the vote is in, just take all the machines. I'm going to go. Love your show.
Thank you, John. Yeah, I definitely think that's you can't underestimate Trump. I do sometimes listen to Mary Trump, his niece's podcast, and I mean, the picture of this man, definitely he is, you know, he is a narcissist, and definitely has been used his entire life to getting away with things and enjoying the privilege of the right to do that, right? And with the Republican Party in total lockstep with him, it definitely seems like the democracy itself is at stake. And he does. I mean, we did just have a very large No Kings protest, and that is a very apt description of what's going on. And I know that after the national protests where millions marched against him, Trump did release some sort of horrible AI video on his social media, I think even on the White House media, saying with him in a fighter jet with a crown on his head, basically dropping excrement on the crowds below, and it was pretty disgusting. And of course, Speaker Johnson just basically supported his right to do that. Right, this is the Speaker of the House, Congress, and so this is where we're at. I think that we need to be focused on the election. I think even Obama, who is a moderate, is issuing warnings about the safety of the upcoming midterms and what might happen. I know that there was an article recently about how a Republican is now in charge of most of the voting recently. I think that came out, so I'll have to look that up. But Wired magazine last week had an article about how one Republican now controls a huge chunk of U.S. election infrastructure. So former GOP operative Scott Leindecker just bought Dominion Voting Systems, giving him ownership of voter systems used in 27 states. Election experts don't know what to think. So, so the news last week, this was a week and a half ago, that Dominion Voting Systems was purchased by the founder and CEO of No Inc., a Missouri-based maker of electronic poll books, has left election integrity activists confused over what, if anything, this could mean for voters and the integrity of U.S. elections. The company, acquired by Scott Leindecker, a former Republican Party operative and election director in Missouri before founding No Inc., said in a press release that he was rebranding Dominion, which has headquarters in Canada and the United States, under the name Liberty Vote. It was a bold and historic move to transform and improve election integrity in America and to distance the company from false allegations made previously by President Donald Trump and his supporters that the company had rigged the 2020 presidential election to give the win to Joe Biden. Yeah. And so the Liberty release said that the rebranded company will be 100% American owned and that it will have a paper ballot focus that leverages hand-marked paper ballots, will prioritize facilitating third-party auditing, and is committed to domestic staffing and software development. The press release provided no details, however, to explain what this means in practice. So Dominion is the second leading... Oh, we have a caller. Hi, caller. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Hi, is it me?
Yes.
On?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, hi there.
Hi.
So my name is Rich. I'm calling from Portland. So a couple points I wanted to make. I was in the Army Reserves for 9 years and active duty approximately 3 years. But bringing in the National Guard troops, so I don't understand how... judges ruled that it's okay to federalize the National Guard troops, because under U.S. Code 10, Title 10, they can only be federalized under three conditions, and that is if there's an invading foreign army, if there's an armed insurrection, which neither of those have been met, mm-hmm. and then thirdly, it's the if the local law enforcement cannot get a handle on riots or if there's civilian criminal activity that local law enforcement needs help with, then they under Title 10 you can federalize National Guard troops. So neither of those three conditions have been met. So I don't understand how the judges are siding with Trump on mm-hmm. on that. And then secondly, I just wanted to make the point that. And, you know, National Guard troops are citizen soldiers. They drill 1 week in a month, typically, and for a few weeks, you know, they'll have some active duty training. They can be deployed for short stints, 3 month stints, 2 month stints, like in D.C. And, you know, I'm originally from Washington, D.C. I've been in Portland for 20 years. But, you know, the National Guard troop presence there was fairly limited. I mean, you know, a lot of them were not armed. Some that were armed were around the federal buildings there in D.C. But they really was just more for optics. And I think what Trump's trying to do here, because he loves to pick on Portland, is trying to use them as bait. And as long as, you know, we don't take the bait, you know, mm-hmm. and keep it peaceful, you know, we can show up in our inflatable frog outfits and unicorns and whatnot and keep it Portland and keep it weird. You know, we can keep it to that level and not take the bait. Then I think we'll be fine after all this. Mm-hmm. I don't foresee like a Kent State, historical event happening. That was a different time, different era. And again, you know, those were National Guard troops as well. And that was an awful, awful time in history. I don't foresee that happening here. Like I said, you know, these are highly trained civilian soldiers, but they are civilians, you know, mostly civilian soldiers. I mean, there are neighbors, there are business owners, there are, you know, a local, they're local Oregonians. A lot of them are from Oregon that, from what I understand, that will be deployed at the ICE building. So I'm just hoping that this will all blow over and we don't escalate this like we did in 2021 when Trump sent federal troops to downtown Portland. And, you know, at that time during the George Floyd protests and that time in our history, you know, it had been a handful of protesters, peaceful, and then, you know, the poop hit the fan after Trump sent federal troops, and then, you know, of course, thousands of Oregonians, Portlanders showed up afterwards, because, you know, we just, you know, I mean, Portland is a city that loves to protest because we care. You know, we're compassionate about justice. We are, you know, we're empathetic. You know, we care for immigrants. You know, we care about how they're treated. So I'm just hoping that this all doesn't escalate, and that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, me too. I hope so as well. Thank you for your service, but also thank you for your clarification. I think the Title 10 of the U.S. Code is a good thing to bring up. And if these judges, these Ninth Circuit judges, were really looking at the law, they would have addressed that more adequately rather than simply believing the inflammatory descriptions by this administration about what's happening here. And I also will note that on September 30th, Brigadier General Alan Groenewald, he said that the Guard soldiers in Oregonian would be to their goal would be to protect Oregonians, and so he said he didn't understand what Trump was authorizing with full force, and that he said that we're the home team and our job is to protect and serve Oregonians, and we follow lawful orders, and that's what we're doing. So we have a caller. Hello? Oh, I guess we lost that caller. Sorry, please do call back. We have a few more minutes left. And that was what's going on there, I think. So I'm going to look at this article that came out today from the Oregonian. What would troops do in Portland? Would they have guns? And would they accompany ICE agents on raids? That's the title. It says that, with the very real possibility that National Guard soldiers could deploy to Portland as early as this week, questions abound about what they do once they arrive. Would they be assigned solely to protect the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Building in South Portland, or would they venture out into other parts of Portland, escorting ICE agents as they hold presumed immigrants? I think you heard recently that ICE had raided a home of a family, and they had got the wrong family and terrorized them with guns. That happened here locally. Hold presumed immigrants at gunpoint or seize them from homes, workplaces, businesses next to schools and the streets. And we have the caller. Hello. Hi, Arthur.
Good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to convey a brief story before the end of the show. I was in a TriMet on a train. Mm-hmm. I'm 6 years old, white man. I'm sitting next to a man similar to my age. He's an 8-year veteran of the Army. Mm. Next to him is a young black man in his 20s. Mm. I've got my bicycle on. I'm sitting down holding my bicycle. The young man is standing up holding his bicycle. And then there was a stranger that totally looked out of place. You could tell he was not from Portland. He was like pointing to me and the other guy with the bike, going, go hang your bike up on that hook. You know, the hook that messes up the spokes on the wheel. Mm. He goes, go ahead and, so he's trying to boss us around. Mm. So me, just a quick point, me, the similar old man next to me, the veteran, and the young man standing up, we just ignored the guy, but there was definitely an ICE agent on the TriMet train.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he's obvious, like a sore thumb, he stuck out. So I'll let you make a closing comment. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Wow. ICE agents on MAX trains. That is, that does make people feel unsafe, well, wherever they go. And that's awful. Yeah. So, going back to this Oregonian, thank you for your call. Thank you, Arthur. And going back to this article, they ask, could these National Guard members unleash tear gas on, shoot projectiles at, or detain people in crowds outside the ICE facility that have protested President Donald Trump's crackdown on immigrants? Would these guard members carry guns? The answer to at least some of these questions, while uncertain, could be yes. The needs for answers intensified Monday with referring to the three-judge panel, Ninth Circuit of Appeals, ruling that sided with Trump by a 2-1 vote, which overruled the lower court's order that temporarily barred the Trump administration from sending 200 federalized Oregon National Guard troops into the city. Soldiers could arrive within another day to days, though two legal hurdles still stand in the way. First, a lower court must also overrule a second temporary order barring National Guard troops from any state, including 200 to 300 from the California National Guard, from deploying into Portland. The judge on that case has indicated that she likely will lift her secondary temporary block and soon. And the wider Ninth Circuit would need to shun an attempt to get a larger contingent of the court to overturn Monday's three-judge ruling. A Ninth Circuit judge has set a deadline of midnight Wednesday for the state, city, state, and federal government to file written arguments for why or why not a broader range of judges should weigh in. So that is tonight. They have to submit those arguments. The Oregonian, Oregon Live, reached out to the U.S. Department of Defense, the Oregon Military Department, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, U.S. So they reached out to all these folks. What troops on the ground might look like, but they didn't answer specific questions, provide general statements, or in the case of local and state officials, said they had been left in the dark. So we have to wrap this up now, but thank you so much for calling in, and I will be back in a couple weeks, but I hope that we'll see what happens in the next few weeks, and stay safe out there, and have a hope for the best. Thank you. This is Jacqueline Keeler, Wednesday Talk Radio.
Circus, if you're seeking respect and attention, if you're in need of a gig that'll help you feel big, come with me and put some folks in detention. Just last week was kind of rough. I put a kid in cuffs. I zip-tied a woman to a van. We can sneak around town hunting working folks down. I hear they got a great...
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
Minorities join ICE. See, I failed the academy. The cops weren't having me. The army didn't sound that fun. So I found me a paramilitary operation that was keen to hand me a gun. I got picked on.
You are tuned into listener supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public